Today is Thursday, March 18th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Tanzanians mourn President John Pombe Magufuli.
He will be remembered for a number of things, both positive and perhaps negative, too.
Also, tension rises between U.S. and China.
Russians will be held accountable for the actions that they have taken. We'll have more on that soon.
Plus, investigations into the killing of 8 people in Atlanta intensify. These stories and more are next. Tanzanians are mourning President John Pombe Magufuli, one of Africa's most prominent coronavirus skeptics, who died Wednesday, aged 61. Magufuli was widely admired and supported in his country, and his death is a shock for many people. In a statement, the U.S. State Department, while extending the condolences of Americans, said the administration, quote, "will continue to work with the government of Tanzania to improve ties between the American and Tanzanian people. The United States remain committed to continuing to support Tanzanians as they advocate for respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms and work to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope that Tanzania can move forward on a democratic and prosperous path," the statement said. Tanzania's late president, John Pombe Magufuli, was the 5th and shortest-serving president in Tanzania's post-independence history. What legacy does Magufuli leave behind, and what's next for politics in Tanzania? To find out, VOA's Jason Patekin speaks with Mwamoyo Hamza, the VOA Swahili service chief.
Well, he will be remembered for a number of things, both positive and perhaps negative, too. Remember when President Magufuli came on after his election in 2015, he quickly got work, and his motto coming into leadership was, now it's just work. And he did exactly that, making very popular decisions such as scrapping lavish Independence Day celebrations in favor of a street cleanup. He banned unnecessary foreign travel for government officials. Dozens of people were implicated in corruption. They were suspended. It was even a hashtag that went around in East African country and almost the whole continent. What would Magufuli do? It spread across the continent, where many were tired of corruption scandals, and they became enamored of Magufuli's what they called a bulldozer style.
But as you said, there's also the negative. Can you talk about that?
He started cracking down on media, for instance. And opposition leaders accused Magufuli of throttling democracy after he banned political rallies and halted live coverage of parliament sessions. An opposition member, Tundu Lissu, was shot 16 times in what his Chadema party and himself, Lissu, maintained that it was an assassination attempt by the government. In mid-2016, if I recall correctly, authorities began what Human Rights Watch called an unprecedented crackdown on the rights of LGBT community, with a rise in arrests, threats, and shutting of clinic providing AIDS-related services.
And of course, no discussion of his legacy can be complete without his stance on the coronavirus. He denied it even existed in Tanzania for almost a year. Can you talk about that?
The coronavirus denial is one of the most controversial things I think people will remember Magufuli for. In March of last year, Tanzania confirmed its first case of coronavirus. But in April, Magufuli calls for 3 days of prayer, urging citizens to continue praying to God and not depending on face masks. As cases were shaking up the East African region, Magufuli accused the health minister of creating panic. And in April of that year, Tanzania stopped publishing official case numbers. And since then, there has been no official case numbers of coronavirus. However, in 2021, this year, with pressure mounting and coronavirus cases soaring, it was revealed that Vice President of the semi-autonomous Zanzibar died of COVID-19. So Magufuli in February appears to concede it exists. And then February 27, Magufuli was seen in public for the last time. And then the rumors started about his whereabouts, he's sick and all that. But there was no confirmation until his death was announced on March 17 by the vice president.
That's my colleague, Mwamoyo Hamza, the head of VOA Swahili. He was speaking with VOA's Jason Patenkin. As tributes pour in from other African heads of state, Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, says he hopes the death of President John Magufuli allows Tanzanians to begin an exercise of national dialogue and reconciliation. He tells VOA's James Batte that President Magufuli's 5 years in office damaged the constitutional foundations of Tanzania.
I have been saying for over a week that the president was sick. I have been demanding the government to come forth and tell Tanzanians the truth. They have not been forthcoming. But finally, you cannot hide a death. And certainly, you cannot hide the death of the president. And they've been forced to tell the truth finally.
There was an announcement on the Tanzanian national television. What did they say? What did he die from?
Well, the little piece that I have seen, the little clip that has come my way, does not say anything about what, but it doesn't really matter now. They don't have to tell us where, how, and why he died. We have known, at least I have been saying this for the past 10 days, that he had contracted corona. And corona brought on other complications. I was given very credible information that after corona struck, he had a massive heart attack and he's been comatose for quite some time. So even though the vice president has not said the cause of death, but the point is he's died and he's died of corona. They would not say it because this man had thumbed his nose to the world. He had declared the country corona free when people who knew better knew that there were Tanzanians dying of corona. This guy went contrary to every known norm of civility with regard to the fight against corona, defied the world, defied science. He put his faith to prayers, to steam inhalations, to herbal concoctions of unproven quality, of an unproven effectiveness.
What is your evidence that the president died from COVID-19?
I know because I was told by people who I'm not going to name, but they told me 2 weeks ago that the president had COVID-19. They later told me that he had suffered a massive heart attack. That was last week when he was transferred to Nairobi on Monday last week. We were talking about COVID-19 then. They say the president is fine, the president is working. And now they are saying, a week later, they're now saying, he has just died and he's just died and he died of heart attack and they want us to believe them. It's a bit late in the day for them to be believed, Mr. Batte. I don't believe them.
That's Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, speaking with my colleague, James Batte, host of Daybreak Africa. Tensions are rising between the United States and Russia following sharp statements from President Joe Biden about Vladimir Putin over the Russia president's attempt to undermine the 2020 U.S. election. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the story.
Russia meddled in the 2020 U.S. election, and President Vladimir Putin authorized influence operations to hurt Joe Biden's candidacy in favor of then-President Donald Trump, according to a U.S. intelligence report released earlier this week. President Joe Biden had sharp words for Putin, calling him a killer and saying he will pay a price.
Russians will be held accountable for the actions that they have taken. We'll have more on that soon.
In response to the poisoning of Kremlin critic leader Alexei Navalny, the U.S. on Wednesday said it was tightening sanctions on some exports to Russia. More sanctions related to the election interference are expected. Meanwhile, Moscow has recalled its ambassador from Washington. William Courtney is a senior fellow at the RAND Corporation.
It is rare for a U.S. president to refer to the leader of a major adversarial power as a killer. Sometimes ambassadors are withdrawn after insults, for example. And, of course, the Biden administration has talked about more sanctions with regard to the SolarWinds cyber attack. So both of those could be factors that will be taken into account.
According to the U.S. intelligence report, Russia spread false allegations about then-candidate Biden using Ukrainian operatives working through members of Trump's inner circle, including his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. These types of disinformation campaigns are expected to continue, capitalizing on polarization within American society, said Nina Yankowitz, disinformation fellow at the Wilson Center.
The hot button issues, like, for instance, Black Lives Matter or abortion or gun rights, these are all things that our adversaries are using, they're amplifying, and they're weaponizing in order to drive Americans against one another, to pit us against one another, and to discourage participation and confidence in the democratic system.
With the U.S. having an overwhelming military advantage, adversaries have resorted to cybersecurity attacks and disinformation campaigns. Working together with Western allies, the U.S. can retaliate through sanctions, visa and banking restrictions targeted to the elites of these countries, said Elizabeth Braw, fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, who focuses on deterrence against emerging forms of aggression.
If you interfere in our countries, we'll freeze your bank accounts. And we're not going to say beforehand whose bank accounts. It can be anybody we choose. And things like that, where we use... What we have as liberal democracies to our advantage.
While the administration said that punitive measures are coming, they also stressed that there are areas for cooperation with Russia, including on climate change, Iran nuclear negotiations, and arms control. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
A senior Russian lawmaker is warning that Moscow will follow up on its move to recall its ambassador in Washington with other actions if the United States fails to offer an explanation and apology for President Joe Biden's remarks. Konstantin Kosachev, a deputy speaker of the upper house of Russian parliament, said Thursday that Biden's, quote, boorish statement, unquote, marks a watershed. He warned that Russia's response wouldn't be limited to recalling the Russian ambassador, quote, if the American side fails to offer explanations and excuse, unquote. He wouldn't elaborate on what other actions the Kremlin may take. Top U.S. and South Korean officials have concluded talks in the South Korean capital Seoul, largely on security threats posed by North Korea. Despite Washington's recent attempt to open dialogue with Pyongyang, the Kim Jong-un government says it will not engage. Jason Stroder reports from Seoul.
Speaking in Seoul, where he and U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with their South Korean counterparts, Foreign Affairs Minister Chung Yi-young and Minister of National Defense Seo-uk, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said Washington is working closely with its allies in the region on containing the North Korean threat.
We are committed to the denuclearization of North Korea, reducing the broader threat the DPRK poses to the United States and our allies, and improving the lives of all Koreans, including the people of North Korea, who continue to suffer widespread and systematic abuses.
Defense Minister Seo says North Korea poses threats to all three countries. He says we agree that trilateral security cooperation between South Korea, the United States, and Japan is important for safety and peace in Northeast Asia. The Biden administration says it has tried to restart talks with North Korea and reached out through its mission to the United Nations in New York and other back channels, but received no response. On Thursday, Pyongyang acknowledged those attempts. But Choi Son-hee, the North's vice foreign minister, said in a statement carried by state media that the regime will not engage in dialogue until the U.S. drops what she calls its hostile policy toward her country. Hee Jin Koo, a research fellow at the Korean Peninsula Future Forum in Seoul, says Pyongyang might be signaling that it wants higher-level contact, like it received during the Trump administration.
What it wants is to have a status quo, also an easing of the current sanctions, which has actually pinched North Korea's economy, especially amid the pandemic.
Despite this impasse, Koo says Blinken and Austin's trip to the region is a turning point for the United States and its allies. Jason Strother for VOA News, Seoul.
Britain pledged to counter what it calls the strategic threat posed by China as it set out its new 10-year defense strategy this week. Britain is seeking to carve out a new role on the world stage outside the European Union, according to the Policy Review, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
In presenting the so-called integrated review to Parliament, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said China presents a systemic challenge to Britain's security.
There is no question that China will pose a great challenge for an open society such as ours. But we will also work with China where that is consistent with our values and interests, including building a stronger and positive economic relationship.
Several lawmakers accused Johnson of going soft on China by seeking deeper trade links. The Prime Minister said those seeking a new Cold War with Beijing were mistaken. He also underscored Britain would remain committed to NATO and security in Europe.
And from this secure basis, we will seek out friends and partners wherever they can be found, building a coalition for openness and innovation, and engaging more deeply in the Indo-Pacific.
To demonstrate that engagement, Britain's new aircraft carrier, the HMS Queen Elizabeth, will make its maiden voyage to the Indo-Pacific later this year. Prime Minister Johnson will visit India next month. Britain plans to spend $292 billion on new military equipment over the next 10 years. Countering China's assertiveness will require a broad response, says analyst Viola Nouwens of the Royal United Services Institute.
This won't just be about sending ships to the region or planes to the region. It will really be about equally investing in new technologies, be that quantum, be that AI, cyber, space, you name it. So it really is a broader challenge than just, I think, the immediate military, visible military things that we know of when we speak about, you know, China's rise and assertiveness in the Indo-Pacific itself.
Britain cannot compete with China's military expansion, says Nouwens.
We do have limited resources. So it is really about finding those angles that the UK already has real strengths in and working with partners and allies on others to try and shore up capabilities, shore up knowledge.
Prime Minister Johnson said the United States would remain Britain's closest ally. Meanwhile, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin are visiting allies Japan and South Korea, with China at the top of the agenda. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Authorities said a white male suspect in a shooting rampage in the U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia, that left 8 people dead, including 6 women of Asian descent, denies race was a factor in the killings. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan has an update on the shooting and reaction among Asian immigrants.
5 people were shot at the first of 3 businesses, all Asian massage parlors near Atlanta. One man survived there and was taken to the hospital. 50 kilometers away, as police investigated a second shooting that left 3 people dead, they received a report of a murder at a spa across the street. Police later arrested 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long after a highway chase.
He made indicators that he has some issues, potentially sexual addiction, and may have frequented some of these places.
With 6 Asian women dead, the crime shocked Asian Americans around the country and prompted calls of concern.
A crime against any community is a crime against us all.
2 of the spas were owned by Korean Americans, says the chief correspondent for a local Korean language news outlet.
Oh, they are shocked. This morning, young professionals in Korean-American community have organized the rapid response team in order to take care of victims and prevent further violence.
The suspect's claim that he was motivated by a sex addiction must be weighed against other evidence, says a former U.S. attorney for the Northern Georgia District.
And setting aside for a moment the motivation behind why that happened, you can't dispute the impact that it has had on Asian Americans.
Vice President Kamala Harris expressed support for the Asian American community, but added the shootings are part of a larger issue,
which is the issue of violence in our country and what we must do to never tolerate it and to always speak out against it.
As one more community copes with another mass shooting. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on Wednesday there is, quote, no question, unquote, that the Trump administration's rhetoric on the coronavirus pandemic has elevated threats against Asian Americans. Former Republican President Donald Trump has been repeatedly accused of racism over his use of labels such as, quote, the Chinese virus, unquote, when referring to the coronavirus pandemic.
I think there's no question that some of the damaging rhetoric that we saw during the prior administration, calling COVID the Wuhan virus or other things, led to perceptions of the Asian American community that are inaccurate, unfair, has elevated threats against Asian Americans. And we're seeing that around the country. That's why even before the horrific events of last night, he felt it was important to raise this issue, elevate it during his first primetime address, why he signed the executive order earlier in his presidency, and he will continue to look for ways to elevate and talk about this issue.
That's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. This is the Voice of America. Afghanistan's defense ministry says a helicopter crash overnight has taken the lives of at least 9 Afghan military personnel in the central province. On Thursday, it said that 4 crew members of the M117 helicopter, along with 5 security personnel, were killed in the crash in the Bershud district of Maidan Radak province. It gave no further detail except to say that investigations were ongoing. Indonesian authorities on Thursday transferred 22 suspected militants arrested in recent weeks to the capital. The suspects were linked to a banned militant organization, the Al-Qaeda-linked Jamaah Islamiyah Network, police said. The group is blamed for a string of bombings in Indonesia, including the 2002 bombings in Bali that killed 202 people, mostly foreign tourists. China's government is calling on Washington to drop efforts to expel 3 state-owned Chinese phone companies from the United States in a new clash over technology and security. The Federal Communications Commission voted to begin revoking the company's U.S. licenses. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The European Union's executive arm rolled out plans Wednesday for a green certificate to ensure COVID-19 safe travel across the 27 member grouping by June, even as the region grapples with an uptick of the pandemic and a slow vaccination rollout. For VOA, Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
EU leaders will discuss the COVID-19 travel certificate plan during a summit next week. But European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen laid out the basics of the initiative intended to boost summertime tourism, culture, and other struggling sectors.
It shows or states whether the person has either been vaccinated or a recent negative test, or has recovered from COVID and thus antibodies. Secondly, the certificate will make sure that the results or what it shows, the data and the minimum set of data, are mutually recognized in every member state.
She said the certificate will help safely reinstate free movement within the bloc, a key issue compromised by the pandemic. The idea of COVID-19 travel passes is controversial for a mix of reasons, including the fact relatively few EU citizens have been vaccinated. Brussels says the certificates do not aim to discriminate, will respect privacy and European laws, and will be scrapped once the pandemic ends. Some EU member states have already announced variations of the idea, including tourist-dependent Greece and Cyprus, which have announced a vaccine passport deal with Israel. But others are more wary. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.